Revelation chapter 3, verses 7 through 13. This will be our final of the seven churches in Asia. Today, the Church of Brotherly Love, the church at Philadelphia. Beginning at verse 7, chapter 3, the book of Revelation. And to the angel, that is the pastor or the shepherd of the church at Philadelphia, write, He who is holy, who is true, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, and who shuts and no one will open, says this, I know your deeds. Behold, I have put before you an open door which no one can shut, because you have a little power, and you have kept my word, and have not denied my name. Behold, I will cause those of the synagogue of Satan, who say they are Jews but are not, but lie, I will make them come and bow down at your feet and make them know that I have loved you, because you have kept the word of my perseverance. I also will keep you from the hour of testing, that hour which is coming quickly upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. I am come quickly. Hold fast what you have. See that no one take your crown. He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he will not go out from it any more. And I will write on him the name of my God and the name of my city of God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God and my new name. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. The Church of Brotherly Love, the church at Philadelphia, the only church of the seven that God had nothing but good to say about. Don't you wish that would be true of all of our churches? If all seven of our churches in Asia had all had God say something very good, what a different study it would have been. And what a different world it would be we live in today. But not everyone is going to live in Philadelphia. But many of us can. And the fact of the matter is that all of us can, if we so choose, to live in Philadelphia and follow the Lord in how to build a church like the church at Philadelphia. Well, this letter was written by the Lord himself to the Christians of the city of Philadelphia. It was the sixth of seven letters written to the churches in the area that was then in the province of Asia that we now know as Turkey. Philadelphia is unique for a couple of reasons. First of all, it was the youngest of the seven cities in Revelation. They were settled there only 150 years before the birth of Christ. Secondly, the city was founded by Attalus the second, who the ruler of the Pergamum between 159 and 138 BC. We're told that Attalus cared so much for his elder brother Emmaus that it was known, or that he was known as Philadelphios, which of course literally means the one who loves his brother. So the city was named after Philadelphia, meaning the city of brotherly love. Well, the Philadelphia in the U.S. was also named after this city, probably in hopes that it would bring a loving, kind, and gentle city to the United States. If you pull up a map, you'll discover that Philadelphia was located in what now is modern Turkey, about 50 miles southeast of Sardis. It was actually established to be a center for Greek culture for the area. The earthquake that destroyed Smyrna in 17 AD also did a lot of damage to Philadelphia during that era. Well, out of all these seven cities, it was Philadelphia that received the greatest praise of all from the Lord. No condemnation at all from Christ in this passage, or in the text for that matter. The church was such an impact and had such an impact on Philadelphia that long, long, long after the rest of Asia had fallen to Muslims, Philadelphia remained a free Christian city right in the midst of a sea of pagan people. You see, that's what happened when a group of people together love God and serve Him. God blesses that people and that area. Philadelphia was the last bastion of Asian Christianity. It was one of the two cities that still stands even to this day. The Messiah begins by telling that church, I know all the things you do. Again, we're reminded that Christians will be judged not only on our individual salvation, which is based on God's grace and our faith, but the church will also be judged on its works, as well as you and I will be judged by our works. You see, these are the things that we did do for Christ and those things we neglected to do. We need to remember that the church was never intended to be a place of comfort for the saints. The church was more like a hospital for the sick. It's like a resting place for those who come together to worship Christ. That much is true. But if we just rest there and do nothing more, then the church becomes something it was never intended to be. We are not just here to provide a refuge from the hostile world, because the church has a very specific mission and a specific job to do. The mission of the church is to change the world by sharing the hope of the gospel. And that happens when we stand up and say, this is true and that is not. And when we demonstrate the truth by walking in the truth, it not only involves what happens inside the walls of the church, but it also happens outside the walls of the church. We need to speak out against social injustice. We need to take a public stand against pornography and abortion and drunk driving and all the other major sins going on in our world today. And that new thing that they call gender confusion, homosexual marriage, and all of those evil abominations that are in our culture. We as Christians should stand up firmly against sin, not condemn sinners, not condemn those who are caught and trapped in sin, but to condemn the sin itself and to tell those people that are trapped in sin that God has a better way. We should be taking a public stand, just as Wesley did against child labor when he preached against it, and Scott preached against the death of tens of thousands of innocent children through abortion today, and same-sex marriage, and gender confusion. We should be preaching, teaching, and standing against these things. And I've heard many people, when I say that, say, yes, but I have a loved one who is involved in one of those lifestyles. How do I handle them? Well, the thing you cannot do is to cave in and say, well, I guess God will turn his head to look the other way. We have dear friends all over everywhere that are involved in sin. Some are involved in adultery. Some are shacking up outside of marriage. I'm talking about people that have served the Lord, people that were Christian, people that gave their heart to Christ. I have people in my family and people in our line and circle of friends who are in a homosexual marriage or in a homosexual relationship or are gender confused and dressed like the opposite gender. We have all of that too. But what we have to do is to love the people and hate the sin. They're going to say and accuse you of hating them because you hate their sin, but that would not be true. You can show them how much you love them. When they have time of need, you can be there for them. When they have something going on in their life that's turned them upside down, you can be there for them and share the love of God. You can love them even when they are unlovable, because you do remember that you and I were loved by God himself when we were unlovable. So we should love everyone, regardless of the bondage of sin they happen to be in. Even if they hate us, we should love them. That is what brotherly love is all about. It's not about brotherly excuses. It's not about making excuses for a brother's sinful lifestyle. It's about loving a brother enough to tell him the truth and loving them through the truth, even if they hate you as a result of it. You see, the Word of God has provided the moral compass for all of us to follow. It provided the moral compass for the Philadelphia church to guide their actions. And look where it got them. It got them commendation in Christ. And it will get us the same thing. And it will help others to come to know the truth if we stand in and on the truth from a perspective of love. Well, Christ goes on to say in Revelation chapter 3, verse 8, "And I have opened a door for you that no one can shut." I love that verse. It is so special to all of us. What door do you suppose it is that Christ opened to the church at Philadelphia and to you and I today? Well, that question has been asked over and over for 2,000 years, and there have been a lot of answers suggested, but I think I know the answer because I believe it's the most common one that is accepted here, and the Bible itself leans very strongly toward this. It is the door of evangelism that they're praying to be opened. That door is the ability to reach people for Christ. Do you know that people who are out in sin can still be reached for Christ? I was talking about that just a minute ago, talking about my own family, friends, and loved ones who are living in a homosexual lifestyle or an adulterous lifestyle or in a gender-confused lifestyle or whatever the case may be, loving them because the door is open for me to share the gospel with them. But in order for me to find that door, I have to locate the door, and then I have to go through that door, and I have to try it because it's probably unlocked, because God said he opened a door for us that no man can shut. Nobody can shut the door of evangelism except you. You can say no. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the travesty and why many people don't get saved. So many people say no to going through the door. 1 Corinthians 16:19, for there is a wide open door for a great work here, and many people are responding. Colossians 4:3, Paul urges believers to pray for him that God would open a door for our message, the message of the gospel. I really love what Francis Bacon said. He said, he that gives good advice builds with one hand, but he that gives good counsel and good example builds with both hands. But he that gives good admonition and bad example builds with one hand and pulls down with the other. Don't be guilty of tearing down what you build. When you give good admonition and bad example, you tear down as much or more than you build. You know, it's true, it takes longer to build something than it does to tear it down. Have you ever noticed that? You ever watch them implode an old building where they set explosive charges all throughout that building in a certain pattern, and they cause that building to collapse in upon itself without doing any major damage to any structures nearby? They do that by carefully placing those charges at strategic points in the frame of that building. And when it comes down as they planned it. But have you noticed when it comes down, it doesn't take but just a few minutes to bring that building to the rubble and have nothing but a pile of dust and debris on the ground. But it took a long time to build it, didn't it? It took a long time to build that building and only a minute or less to bring it down. That is how it is when you build up with one hand and tear down with the other. Well, the changing power of the hope of the gospel is very evident when you look at the lives of first century Christians. Justin Martyr wrote, "We used to value above all else money and possessions. Now we bring together all we have and share it with those who are in need. Formerly, we hated and killed one another because of a difference in nationality or custom. But now, since the coming of Christ, we all live in peace. We pray for our enemies, and we seek to convert those who hate us." Wouldn't it be grand if the United States of America could get back to that place that Justin Martyr wrote about? Tertullian wrote, "It's our care for the helpless, our practice of loving kindness that brands us in the eyes of many of our opponents. Only look, they say, how they love one another. Only look how they love one another." Wow, what a statement about any group of people. It's this kind of brotherly love that helps us to develop a very strong Christian pyramid. And that's kind of what we're building here. You know what a pyramid is. A pyramid is also, besides the obvious, it's one of the strongest structures known to man. You start with a big base and you build a smaller layer on top and a smaller layer on top. And you keep building smaller layers till you get to the pinnacle of the pyramid. And when you do, that thing can't be brought down by just anything. You have to literally break it down or tear it down. But the one thing that will bring a pyramid down is for one of the bottom layers to crumble. When a bottom layer or a lower layer of a pyramid crumbles, it brings down everything above it. And you see, that's the way it is in a church. When we build a church of brotherly love, and it's all built on the backs of all of us who love one another, but one begins to feign and one begins to love people less than others, the pyramid can collapse as a result. It's the kind of love that will produce a strong Christian pyramid is the kind that God talks about that he calls brotherly love. John 13:35, by this all will know that you are my disciples if you have love one for the other. A world will judge you and I, plus the world will judge the church by how brotherly love is manifested among ourselves and also out in the community. If we backbite and devour one another, the world will view us as such. In fact, that's why Christian people and often ministers make the front page of the National Enquirer. It's because the pastor ran off with the church secretary. It's because somebody in the church who was a high-ranking, well-known official has cheated for many, many years. We have all been so disappointed, especially of late, by well-known apologists and people, men of God, who for years proclaimed the Word of God, only to find out they lived a secret lifestyle in the past for many years, occupying a sexual fantasy outside of the reality of their ministry, falling into the trap of sin. So many pastors through the years, especially lately, are coming out of the closet. And I'm talking about in a lot of different ways, besides the obvious that we think about, announcing that they're gay and they've left their spouse and they want to continue to pastor their church. And sometimes the church will let them do it. There's still many of them doing that today. Some have come out of another closet. They've come out and said they're atheists. They no longer believe in God. They've been preaching about God and the resurrection and the Lord and the plan of salvation. And now all of a sudden they've come out of the closet and said they don't believe in God. They're now an atheist. How many more people are going to come out of the closet? You know what? A lot of people are dismayed about Christianity, not because of Christianity itself, not because of God, not because of the teachings of God, but largely because of the hypocrisy of God's people. May God help us. Help us to realize we must replace hypocrisy with genuine Christian faith and brotherly love. If we don't do that, we will surely die, and the church will die with us. Well, here's some things you can do to help bolster your brotherly love for yourself, your friends, your neighbors, the people at church, everybody around you. Number one, be unselfish. Love your neighbor as yourself, Matthew 22:39 says. All too often, we're more concerned about ourselves than we are our brethren. This should not be. We should treat our brother like we'd want to be treated. Have as much concern about him as we do about ourselves. You see, the Lord's church would explode in number and strength if we started doing that. It's amazing. Second, a proof of discipleship. Well, what is discipleship? Well, first of all, John 13:35 says, by all this you shall know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. Now, the 12 disciples are those 12 men chosen by the Lord himself, one of whom betrayed him. The other 11 followed him faithfully. Discipleship teaching is a basic tenet of Christianity. As Christ taught disciples to follow him, the church teaches disciples to follow the leaders of the church. And when the spiritual leaders of the church go astray, they lead people astray. Discipleship under Christ, under godly leadership, is vital in order to sustain brotherly love. You can't love somebody if you're living a life of hypocrisy. It won't work. You can say you love someone, but you can't genuinely love anybody unless you love God supremely and love Him first. Third thing we need to do is start caring, and that caring will start in the church and go outside the four walls from there. Start caring with the people that you love, that you go to church with. Start caring about them. Start caring about their family. Get involved in their family. They're having some struggles. Let them know you care. Let them know you're there to help. You got a mama who has a young child, and maybe a single mama at that. Why don't you volunteer to babysit while she works, or volunteer to babysit while she goes out and has a night off to get away from the child and the responsibilities of motherhood, to just be able to relax a little while? Why don't you invite her over for lunch one day, especially after church on Sunday? She's had an incredibly busy day. Don't make any demands. Don't make any expectations of return. Just do something good. Care about the people around you. Before long, that care that you show to your own people in the church, your own family, will then reach outside the four walls of that church as your church and you as an individual begin to care about other people. Care about your neighbor. That powerful song that Rusty Goodman wrote rings in my heart and in my ears this morning. In the shadow of the steeple, souls are crying. The song is about a person who lives immediately next door to the church. And about the time the church service on the Sunday morning is going on, the shadow of that steeple is always cast upon the porch of the house where this neighbor lives. And it talks about how that in the shadow of the steeple, this man who's never been invited to church, he's never been cared for by the church people, he's never been paid attention to by anybody, who is loaded with problems and discouragement and depression, who lives there alone. In the shadow of the steeple, someone's crying. And the next verse says, as we sing and as we take up that offering, the cold blue steel he clutches fast and points it to the place where the shadow of the steeple will rest at last on his forehead. Choir sings, the church bells ring, and he stumbles and goes down. And they all just shake their heads and walk away from the figure lying on the ground. In the shadow of the steeple, souls are dying. Souls are dying. They're dying right around us without Christ. Start caring. Start loving. Start reaching out. I am loved, and I can risk loving you, that great song by Bill and Gloria Gaither. I can risk loving you because the one that knows me best loves me most. I am loved. Next of all, be sincere. You know, sometimes we do things out of a heart of duty or a heart of, I've got to do this. I don't really want to, but I've got to do this. We do that with a lot of Christian things, don't we? Reading our Bible and praying and going to church and it's all kinds of things. We do that because we have to. Let's change that to a sincere desire. If you have to make yourself go on occasion, that's human. That's because Satan's trying to stop you. But you know what? You find out when you force yourself to go on and work through that I don't feel good thing, God will bless you and He will take care of you. That, my friends, is a promise. He will. Be sincere. Dear children, it's not merely say that we love each other. Let's show our truth by our actions. Sincere and true love is seen in action. Then let's be fervent. Let's have diligence and zealousness that boils over onto the world. Love should never be taken lightly. Loving God and keeping His commandments requires being fervent. Now, let me tell you what brotherly love will do. Brotherly love will help you to treat another person better than he treats himself. How much less trouble would there be among brethren if only we could practice this principle? Learn to love our brothers more than they love themselves. Wow, how different it would be. How different it would be. And remember to share with those who are in need. Well, there was a blind girl one time who hated herself because she was blind. She also hated everybody around her except for one person, her loving boyfriend. He was so good to her. He was always right there beside her. He was always sharing with her how much he loved her and treasured her. He said that he wanted to marry her, and she said that she would marry him if only she could see the world. Then they could get married. Well, one day she was notified that somebody had donated a pair of eyes to her, and then she could see everything, including her boyfriend. Well, her boyfriend approached her after the surgery, now that she could see, and he said to her, "Now that you can see the world, will you marry me?" The girl was shocked when she saw that her boyfriend also was blind, and she refused to marry him. Her boyfriend walked away in tears. Later on, he wrote her a letter that said, "Please, just take care of my eyes." How much do you love your neighbor? How much do you love your loved one? How much should we love our neighbors? Enough to give them something that's valuable to us? I should hope so. I think that if our neighbor's house was on fire and they were trapped inside with us standing out in the front yard witnessing this event take place, I believe most of us would have to try to rescue them from the flames and the smoke. I don't think any one of us could just stand there and watch them perish in a fire. I know I could not. But you know, the truth is, our neighbors' lives are on fire. Right now, many of them are, because they don't know Christ. And you know their lives are on fire. You know that their souls are in peril. You know that their marriage is in peril. Maybe it's already broken up. You know something about your neighbors. And if you know their lives are on fire and they're trapped in that sinful lifestyle, if you don't do anything about it, then ladies and gentlemen, you're just as guilty as the person standing next door watching the house burn, knowing someone's inside without trying to get them out. You see, it's up to you and I to rescue the perishing. Care for the dying, as the song said. Snatch them in pity from sin in the grave. What a lyric to a great song. Rescue the perishing. Care for the dying. Snatch them in pity from sin in the grave. Let's you and I be the church of brotherly love. Let's be Philadelphia. Let's be the church that truly loves God first and foremost, and then does indeed love its neighbor as itself. Want to say a special thank you for listening to Sunday Worship. That's all the time we have for the program. And do be sure to listen twice on Sunday, 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, and again at 6 p.m. that evening, all Central Time. Go to the website, joychristianradio.com. Use a credit card or debit card there. You can text it. Text the word GIVE, the amount in dollars, to 833-843-2848. Or you can mail it in. The address is Post Office Box 6, Quitman, Mississippi, 39355. Thank you for your prayers, and thank you for your financial contributions that keep us on the air. This is Joy Christian Radio. Have yourself a wonderful day, and I'll see you next time on Sunday Worship.